Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. Along with me from Bristol, England, is Tony Gosling, an esteemed journalist from Bristol, England, and man, he does some hard, good reporting. Welcome to our program, Tony.
Very well, George. And certainly, I always find it very, very tiring, but very exciting and fascinating, genuine journalism. So many journalists now, all they're doing is basically cutting and pasting corporate press releases. So really, they're turning somebody's point of view into an article, which is really just kind of advertising, really. Most of it is something that someone somewhere wants you to hear. Now, when you report on Bilderberg, this is something somebody very powerful doesn't want you to hear. And the whole motivation for all the people reporting on Bilderberg is 100% selfless. It's like a little army of angels, really, trying to tell the public what they really need to know. And what they really need to know is that these guys are the real kingmakers. When we vote, we're wasting our time. Some people say that anyway. I mean, I don't think it's a total waste of time, because these guys make or break people. The Bilderbergers, the crucial element, I think, and the really criminal element amongst them, are the press, because we've got some of the top people. I mean, for example, the boss of Bloomberg. Bloomberg has been called the nerve center or the nerve system of the global financial networks. And the boss is in there, but he's not writing about what's going on. He's there in confidence, keeping secrecy, swearing an oath of secrecy, and he's using his position as a powerful media person in the nerve system of the financial system, in fact, the nerve system of the world, in order to, for his own advantage. So he'll be holding back on what he doesn't want us to know about, and he'll be telling us what he does. And the main reason the press, I think, are there is because this is where the decisions are made. Although, actually, there's probably higher tiers, but this is where the interviews are taking place, really, of the people who are about to take over the Western world, right across the NATO countries.
It seems to me that they're war-making. They have all these very, very top-level people, and that's what it sort of appears to me in anti-Russian commentary.
Well, what makes you say that, particularly?
There are these meetings going on, not only at the Bilderberg, but the NATO meeting, and then you have the G7 over in Canada. And in addition to that, you have the Shanghai meeting being held in China. So this negative thing about Russia, those are some of the reasons why I think they're over there war making, to tell you the truth. What do you think, Tony?
Yeah, there's a lot of an alignment, certainly this weekend. That's right. A lot of these, almost like alignment of the planets going on. But, I mean, I don't know if that's totally significant. I mean, one thing it does prove, because Bilderberg has generally taken place the weekend before the G8 or the G7 conference. And now, I mean, it's become pretty obvious over the years, but now it's absolutely clear that the G7 is really just the theatre. The script writers are Bilderberg, and once they have decided what's going to be the priorities for the year, whether that be war, financial calamity, takeover of a particular country, whatever, or some kind of new scam, then that then gets rolled out, and that becomes what the puppets, really, which most of these modern leaders are from the G7 or what might become the G8 if Trump gets his way and Russia joins. Again, rejoins. So they're happening at the same weekend, which I think shows just how seamless this whole business has become. But Bilderberg is certainly, I mean, one of the things is it doesn't often get mentioned is there's lots of Zionists at Bilderberg, lots of people who are very much pro this whole sort of recreation of the Jewish state in Palestine, even though a lot of people would say it doesn't really run along proper Jewish religious lines at all. It's more of a military project and less of a, you know, religious project. And also there's a lot of doubt amongst people of faith as to whether there really is any kind of instruction biblically that Jews or anybody else should go and take countries over. I mean, this is an instruction which was given to Moses, something like 3,500, maybe, you know, it's a ridiculously long time ago. And the idea that because something happened, you know, all that time ago, written in the Bible in a book from centuries, millennia previously, that you've then got to take that literally as something you've got to do today. Well, I mean, I think that if you put it in those terms, it sounds ludicrous, and that's what it is. I mean, we're really looking at people, if there's any religion involved, George, it seems to be the religion of money.
Yeah, I've called it mammonism.
Well, I mean, the priesthood, that's right, the priesthood of mammonism, as you beautifully put it, is actually the mafia. They're really, you know.
We're talking about money power, you know, like the City of London and so forth. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but look, the origins of a lot of this are, I mean, the way we are today, effectively run with our political parties bought by these banksters, is in the... People kind of forget where this really started. Okay, it's been going on for centuries, but the current situation began in 1944 up in New Hampshire in the woods there, near Woodstock, actually, at Bretton Woods. And at the Bretton Woods conference, there were lots of discussions which were sensible, but effectively that was a stitch-up too. The whole idea of creating... the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund. All of that, by the way, was based on the dollar. I mean, this was obviously a political play by the United States because they were in a very, very strong position towards the end of the Second World War, economically, militarily, and just credibility-wise. You know, the Americans at the time decided, right, well, we're going to seize the initiative here and we're going to create the architecture for the whole of the... Whatever. Well, I mean, it's now, obviously, we're talking about 70 years or so later. And the Bretton Woods Conference, the setting up of the things like special drawing rights from the International Monetary Fund, this was really a kind of gangster's paradise, really. If you look at the way that then in 1971, Nixon took the dollar off of gold, then what you had effectively was the main currency supposed to be the dollar, the IMF is in charge, and the whole system starts to slowly be deregulated because it didn't really work anymore. And everyone realized that the IMF was used to destroy countries as a kind of economic warfare weapon. No one had really understood, I think, very few people understood economic warfare back in 1944, but that's what they eventually signed up to with Bretton Woods. And that system, remember that at Bretton Woods again, the Bank for International Settlements, they had a vote on and actually dismantling the bank and closing it down, which passed, and that never happened. So the Bank for International Settlements continued in Basel in Switzerland with an anonymous door next to a chocolate shop opposite the main railway station in Basel. Up until about 20 years ago, when they finally came out into the open again. I mean, these were the guys that, the reason they said they were going to have to shut them down was because they were the main bank behind the financing of the rearmament of Nazi Germany against all the orders. But BIS is very powerful. There's several BIS people at Bilderberg still. And also, I think that we have to understand Bilderberg is not, you know, where the main decisions are made. I think that there is a kind of secret command center, secret command committees going on behind the scenes, very much like the old P2 Lodge in Italy was discovered back in the 1980s to be running the city from behind the scenes. Bilderberg is much more a place where these decisions that have already been made are then rolled out amongst potential political puppets. So we've seen, for example, Amber Rudd, who is there. She's the former British Home Secretary who resigned just a few weeks ago. And it may be that she had been invited before she resigned, and they just felt, well, you know, it'd be a bit rude to, and she might have kicked up a fuss if she'd not been actually allowed to go along. But then, you know, she's the sort of person who is not a leader, she's a follower, she's a pliable person, and this is exactly the type of politicians they love, George.
These people are also attending the Davos, the World Economic Forum, and this forum, and that security forum, and this and goes on and on, you know. It's just like Spectre, you know. It's beginning to me to resemble Spectre, you know, in those 007 novels more so than anything else. It's international, and it's got all these criminal tendencies and so forth. So that's what it's beginning to look like to me, Tony.
Well, that's the other side, isn't it? Obviously, infiltrating. You know, they've got infinite amounts of money, it seems, to throw.
They have infinite amounts of money, but they've got all kinds of financial. They're on the ropes on some of these things, so they have an infinite amount of money right now. But China's coming on strong, very aggressively in business and militarily, and grabbing up many of the world's resources. So this is what we've got to be very, very cautious and very, very careful about, is the buildup that's occurring in mainland China. And boy, those people mean business, and they should be taken very seriously. I hope Trump can do some good.
But anyway, I mean, I think the other thing to mention when it comes to Bilderberg is this Freemasonry connection is really important. So important. And they, you know, the guy that set up Bilderberg was, well, there were two of them, but the main kind of mover and shaker behind the scenes, who liked to be known as His Grey Eminence, he was a Polish guy, and he was a Mason, Joseph Rettinger. The Poles, by the way, he was given a death sentence by the Polish resistance in World War II because they believed he was a traitor. Now, you know, that's not me saying that, that's the Polish resistance in the Second World War. So this guy, and also he was implicated in the death of General Sikorsky, who died in a Liberator flying out of, I think it was 1943, I think, out of Gibraltar. And it was the first trip for months that Joseph Rettinger hadn't been on, because he accompanied Sikorsky everywhere. And yet he decided, oh, I'm going to stay at home this time, I'm not going to go with him. And then, lo and behold, the Liberator plunged into the sea and Sikorsky was killed. So, you know, this is guy, Joseph Rettinger, who started Bilderberg, was, you know, he was a Mason, but he was also working for MI6. Stephen Dorrell says in his brilliant book, which I think is called something like The Unauthorized History of MI6, Stephen Dorrell, if you've not come across him, fantastic writer. He also did a book called Smear, which is all about how the British Prime Minister in the 1970s, Harold Wilson, was bounced out of power basically by a coup. You know, he was a Labour Prime Minister, and there were all sorts of smear campaigns against him, and the far right in the military finally just decided they were going to force him to resign, and they did force him to resign. They did things like occupying Heathrow Airport. They said it was an exercise. It wasn't. It was about scaring the cabinet. He himself was bugged and burgled. Most of his cabinet were bugged and burgled by the security services. So this was a concerted campaign by the far right and the army to get rid of the elected Prime Minister of Britain. So that was, you know, Stephen Dorrell's work in exposing some of this stuff has been really, really good. Yeah, Stephen Dorrell's work on exposing, I think it's David Lee as well wrote a book called The Wilson Plot. That whole era in British history is really when we lost democracy. 1976, when the Prime Minister was forced to resign by the army and by the far right, including, by the way, many Bilderbergers. We're talking about the senior people. I mean, Cecil King, who ran IPC, International Publishers Corporation, and they ran the Times back in the 1970s. He was at Bilderberg, and he was one of the main plotters to get rid of Harold Wilson. So I thought on the program that we did on Friday at thisweek.org.uk, which is on the radio in Bristol, 93.2 every week, the politics show, I decided to actually spend a while looking at that because, you know, this is just to remind us we haven't had democracy in Britain. I mean, I can't really speak for other countries so well, but I know Britain very well. We haven't had democracy in Britain, George, since the Prime Minister was kicked out by the army in 1976.
How can you have democracy when you have Ofcom over there replacing five regulatory agencies formerly that regulated media and press? Now there's only one over there. So that's going to limit and put a lid on democracy and freedom of speech. That's a real problem, don't you think?
Well, I think the thing is that in a way the regulators are important, George, but in a way they're not, right? Because what happens is the financial people just buy up all the media that they want. If any media starts to be troublesome, and I can tell you some of the best media in the world is actually in Australia. There's a program called 60 Minutes on ABC television in Australia, which is still one of the most robust documentary series on the planet. They have been particularly good, I might say, in attacking the British establishment quite often to do with things like the paedophile scandal, to do with the British locking up of Julian Assange. They've done some fantastic documentaries exposing the lies of the British establishment and the British media. So there is some good stuff around, but the media is key at Bilderberg. It's key, obviously. This is the spearhead of the war machine, as we know, with the lies about Duma in Syria recently, an attempt to get some kind of invasion going, which failed. And back in 2003 with the lies about the weapons of mass destruction. You know, the media really are the real super criminals, I think, nowadays. And interesting to see, I mean, probably something like a quarter of all the Bilderberg participants are, in their own country, senior media figures.
The Secretary of State of the Vatican is in there delivering secret messages to Bilderberg. And Tony, man, that's something else, isn't it?
Maybe he's the high priest of the meeting. Who knows? That's time. I mean, I would actually separate the Catholic Church from the Vatican, because the Catholic Church has done a lot of good work around the world, particularly in places like South America, you know, in basically standing up and getting shot dead for the sake of human rights, where nobody else seems to be prepared to do it. Some really courageous people. The Vatican is a different matter. The Vatican is complete stitch-up, and I think it probably has been for pretty much the last 1,000 years. I mean, you know, the whole idea, really, there is to control Christianity and control the thinking. The Vatican, it was that turned against the Church of Constantinople, what became the Eastern Orthodox Church, and in fact they even sent the Knights Templar across over to what is now Istanbul, then Constantinople, to sack the city. That's how Christian they were. They wanted to control the faith, and you know, even people might say back in 320, whenever it was that Constantine, the Roman Emperor, converted to Christianity, supposedly. But I think that the Vatican is a serious problem, and you know, the idea of these, many of these people just think that they are somehow fated to run things. But I just think it's quite comical. I can imagine a quite comical sort of scenario where you've got this guy at the front of the meeting, you know, reading out some kind of sermon from some peculiar satanic Bible, you know, that all the Bilderbergers are getting down on their knees, you know, and thank you very much for all of the money that we've been getting over the years.
Yeah, I have Cardinal Pietro Parolin saying all kinds of good things about the church having all these people all over the world, and they have great advantage on information, I think he was saying, gathering information. And so that sounds like an intelligence agency. What do you think about that, huh, Tony?
The Catholic Church developed really the first, you know, big international intelligence gathering agency. Box Wars, that's exactly what it was. But anyway, look, I don't know, do you want to have a go look through some of the participants at this year's Bilderberg? Because I think there's figures in there. I mean, I think probably the most sensible thing to do is to focus on the tech. I mean, let's not forget, obviously, Eric Schmidt straight away. He doesn't need to go to Bilderberg anymore because he's got so many of his minions that go to make sure that his points are made and his points are felt, you know. We could start, I'll just go through sort of alphabetically. There's some really interesting, I mean, stem cell bio, there's a few biotech people, stem cell biotech people. These people are interfering and playing with the very building blocks of embryos and human life. Now, I mean, whether there is just how much ethics there is involved in this, I don't really see any ethics. What I do see, though, George, is this obsession the super rich elite have with transhumanism, which is the idea that they can control life effectively, that they can alter genetically human DNA in order to make sure that rich people have children that live forever. This is a crazy, I think, crazy idea, but they believe it, and they think that they can buy this technology, develop this technology, and they pour billions of dollars into developing this stuff. It's almost like the quantum computing, which is on the list of the Bilderbergs to talk about this year, which is quantum computing is apparently some amazing new type of processor which mimics human consciousness in some way. Now, if I come along to you and say, well, if you give me $1 trillion, I will stand a good chance of developing a human that will live forever, or a computer that will think like a human with human consciousness. You have to listen to a particular part of what I said, which is, I may be able to. But these people seem to want to fund these things because they believe in them as a good thing and as a profitable enterprise. So that's where I think where they are, where they're at with a lot of this. So it's really a good idea, I think, to get hold of and read David Livingstone's stuff on transhumanism. He's done some really good work on looking at the roots of this as a kind of fascist ideology for the 21st century, which is the idea that man can become God and can develop computers that can think like human beings, and that their kids can be allowed to live forever. What they're talking about is this whole thing of, in fact, Ray Kurzweil from Google says a lot of this. He's their guru. Is that effectively you're going to get to a point very soon that they call the singularity, where the computers are going to basically be able to take over from the humans. So, what they're spinning is that, oh well, the computers can do all the work, we won't have to work anymore. We know that that's rubbish, because what they do is, if they own the computers, that means that they control them, and they don't give any of the power that the computers give them to anybody else. They keep it all to themselves. You know, in a sensible world, if we were living in a kind of democratic, fair and open society in the United States and in Europe, we would now be probably working only 2 days a week and wouldn't have to work at all, maybe, because there's so much of the basic work that he's doing is being done by computers now and done by robots and made in these kind of automated factories. But the thing is, the people who own the technology aren't going to let that happen, because they want to make sure that they squeeze everybody else as much as possible. So anyway, so that's the stem cell. That's Elena Cattiano from Italy. She's the director of the Laboratory of Stem Cells Biology, University of Milan. So also Jared Cohen. I'm not sure if you've come across him before. He's at Bilderberg at the moment, this evening. He's from Jigsaw. That is his former director, and he's also former deputy director of the CIA. So you can see where this kind of Google project and Alphabet is coming from, really. It's funded originally by the CIA. The idea is it's going to be an interface with the public. So every time you type on your Google search, in real time, Google and the CIA and the NSA's computers are watching everything you do, and they're building up profiles of you, and they are scanning every single search. And what they can do is, if you type in something that they don't like or that they think is interesting, they can bring up a live human being to be watching everything you're doing live at home, you know. So they're watching everything, and they can bring it up live to just kind of examine, you know, you directly if you're typing something in specifically. So that's another angle of the tech. I'm going to come to you in a minute, because I'm going to run through. There's another one, Canon Dagrevian. Now, he is from MIT. Yeah, he's a Turkish, but he's at MIT. Sorry, she's an MIT. She's making electronic components which adapt to human bodies. Now, the idea is that you can kind of somehow have an interface between, or a, you know, kind of plug between the human body and the nervous system and, you know, computer digital technology. She's never been to Bilderberg before. And, you know, there are all sorts of The idea here, really, I think, is to do with putting chips into people eventually. But, you know, she's a fascinating character. There's obviously the usual military, but there's also, you know, some interesting people I've never seen before. I don't think this guy's been before. Oh, yes, hang on. Yes, he has. Roger Ferguson. He's the president of TIAA. He's also from the Federal Reserve Bank, but he's also one of the directors of Google's parent company, Alphabet, again. You know, a lot of these people are there. I mean, it's almost as if they've got a kind of tech project called Google, CIA have created, called, and they've called it Alphabet now because they own Google. And almost all these people, it seems, are involved in Bilderberg one way or another. Just keep going. It's Demis Hassabis. He's British, apparently, but he's also Google DeepMind, an expert on artificial intelligence. He's been a game developer. Now, this is interesting, isn't it? Because games, well, we're talking about game theory, effectively. That is to say, any kind of objective that you want to achieve, you program a computer to game it, and you play it like a game. Now, that might involve the media, it might involve the financial markets, but you're treating every objective and everything you want to achieve as a game. And apparently you can win if you do that, but that's unless people realize you're playing a game and decide to opt out of your game. But that's why sometimes people, I think, in the real world out here feel rather bullied, harassed, you know, maybe, you know, despairing of the world. It's because they're being gamed. Someone is playing with them, literally. So he's an interesting character, I think. Google is, so many Google people at Bilderberg, is getting crazy. But anyway, let's come now to your possible next president. He is John Hickenlooper. John Hickenlooper. He's the governor of Colorado.
Thank you, Tony. We need that information.
Yeah, now you may not have heard of him, but then in 1991, nobody had heard of Bill Clinton, hardly, apart from in Arkansas. Because Hickenlooper is a Democrat. He has said he wants to run for president. The fact is that it's quite feasible, obviously Hillary is a busted flush, that he may well get the Democratic nomination for the next presidential election. So keep your eye on John Hickenlooper, because this is the sort of thing that Bilderberg do. They bring along people like this who look like it. There may be some rumblings about them being in the running for one of the main, you know, two main parties' nominees. But this is the guy. So if the United States gets Trump in 2020, this guy could be running the show. And you heard it here first.
Tony, you always coming up with some jewels like that. Yeah, you know, there was some brief news about him recently, and he prepared, didn't he?
Well, that sounds like Bill Clinton's operation down at Mena Air Base.
Yeah, they really had a big fly-in, didn't they, huh?
Then it's also, so staying with the tech stuff, there's a guy called Tim Huang. He's also from MIT. He's a director of ethics and governance of artificial intelligence. Robots replacing unreliable workers and soldiers. So remember, this is a major part of all of this artificial intelligence is to do with war fighting. You know, I was talking about gaming, but you start plugging these gaming programs into drone swarms and these kind of robots, you know, fighting robots, soldier robots. This is where these guys are coming from. I don't know if some of the politicians like Amber Rudd realize this, these kind of pliable politicians realize what they're getting themselves into here. Also interesting character is Wolfgang Ischinger. He's the chairman of the Munich Security Conference. Now, this is the major gathering of the military for the whole world. So you're talking about the real big boys. Amazing, really. Amazing, incredible, and absolutely damning that the mainstream media don't cover this conference, because everybody, bar everybody.
I think General Petraeus is there with the KKR bunch, I believe. Yeah.
That's right. And another participant I would point out is a guy called Klaas Knot. He's Dutch, president of the Netherlands Bank, but he's also a friend of Mark Carney from the Bank for International Settlements. The board of the Bank for International Settlements, that's this bank, the Nazi funding bank that was supposed to be closed down by the Bretton Woods people. Then this Danica Krajic, she's Swedish, I think this is she. Yeah, she is, a professor of robotics, AI and robotics experts at Bilderberg. She's from the School of Computer Science and Communications. What are these guys planning? I mean, you know, it just seems obvious to me that there's such a load of high-tech people there that they're looking very carefully at what kind of technologies they can convince governments to buy, that they can convince militaries to buy, that sort of thing. And also another tech person is from the US, that's Devesh McCann. He worked at Goldman Sachs, but he's basically a funder of these new startups from Silicon Valley. So another guy who's, you know, basically there to bit of a Peter Thiel type character who goes around, if there's somebody with an idea that fits with this whole transhumanist agenda, the high tech agenda of Bilderberg, you stand a really good chance of getting an absolute wedge of cash from him. And if your little project doesn't work out, it doesn't matter, because this money was just made up out of nowhere and lent out at interest by the financial Bilderbergers anyway. So they don't really care. John Micklethwaite and Zanny Minton-Beddoes, British and American. Now, he was the editor-in-chief of Bloomberg, Micklethwaite. He was the editor of The Economist. Now, it's Minton-Beddoes who's the editor of The Economist. It just shows you, this is the absolute core of the New World Order publishing system.
The Agnelli interests now own over 42% of The Economist now.
That's right. Well, it's always been very much a Rothschild type organization. That's right, but it's still, I think, very much a sort of a Rothschild-type publication. You can almost gauge what Rothschild wants you to think by reading the book.
Yeah, you're right. Rothschilds with several other families still are retaining an interest in The Economist.
That's right. Another tech person. I just find this obsession with tech this year really, really dominates the agenda for me. Hartmut Nevin, he's a US, he's a director of engineering at Google. There you go, you'll be pally with Ray Kurzweil and probably one of his followers, the guru. He is also head of quantum computing and artificial intelligence at Google. Now, you know, they're replacing the workers with robots, and they're replacing the soldiers with robots, and they're replacing the strategists with game programs. I mean, I think this is what they believe will win them the world. You know, their big prize will be the world. I've got news for them. It comes in the form of somebody called Vladimir Putin, who is not going to have any of this, and he's not going to be gamed, and he's actually out there in the real world, and he's going to stop them, and he is stopping them. I mean, yes, just to say, George, you know, Russians I've spoken to over the last couple of weeks are absolutely clear that they don't want to fight, but by jingo, if they have to, they are absolutely up for a fight. And they believe they can win as well. So that is, if the United States, NATO, and Britain take the fight to the United States, to Russia. I mean, that's also, I think, something very, very interesting has been happening with that. I think the Brits are more behind this anti-Russian feeling than the United States. I only say that because of the Skripal affair and the way that was basically originated in Britain, but also by Trump's announcement.
Tony, they just keep repeating the poisoning lie again in the airlines and stuff.
Still trying to say that. Still trying to say the same about the Malaysian airliner as well, the MH17. But it's just a lie. They can keep repeating the lies all they want. It doesn't make them true. The Russians know that. So the rest of the world knows that. But, you know, what you've got is a real attack on Russia. The other thing is Trump yesterday saying that he wanted the Russians to rejoin the G7 and make it the G8. Now, hang on a minute. The Brits didn't like that. In fact, Theresa May apparently at the G7 gave Trump a ticking off. And I don't really think she's got the... Yeah, she's not really got the kudos to give Trump a ticking off. She's in no position to do that. But she tried anyway, you know. But so I actually think the Brits, you know, it was a real interesting moment for me, because I think the Brits, and probably the Israelis too, are much more in the driving seat. And America seems to be this, almost like this, I hate to say it, but almost like the bear, not the Russian bear, the American bear, a big beast that can probably kill or eat anything that it decides it doesn't like. But the thing is, it hasn't got a very big brain, and the brain is being controlled from elsewhere. I don't mean to sound insulting when I say that, but I think that there are lobbies within the United States, very powerful lobbies, that are basically steering it in a direction which is against its own interests.
We're seeing these interests, I think, steering Trump towards war with Iran. That's what I see.
They certainly seem to be trying to do that. Anyway, look, just churning through the list before we finish. It's also Patrick Chit. He's Canadian. He's a partner in Inovia Capital. Now, he was a chief financial officer at Google. Remember, so Google all the way. Now, remember that Google is the organization that many of these high-tech, high-finance people believe is going to basically take over the world's minds. So Google will be supplying us with news. It will be doing our emails for us. It will be supplying us with YouTube, our content, everything we see. And so that's why I think there's this absolute emphasis on Google. They are completely obsessed with controlling the media, completely obsessed. Google is obviously the future of that, because a lot of advertising revenue is going to Google, and that means that they'll be able to do things that maybe struggling newspapers won't. But remember, the other aspects of media are things like magazines, radio, television, daily newspapers, and one that people often forget is books, book publishing. Many of these organizations now have become consolidated into very few people's hands, like the Murdochs, you know, through HarperCollins and people like that. And there's a handful of people now deciding what we're allowed to think. But right at the spearhead of all of that is this company Google, which is, I think, why we've seen so many people at Bilderberg, because the Bilderberg people want to buy the future. They want to buy the past. They want to buy the present. They want to buy everything that we're allowed to think and see. That's what their interest is. I mean, I don't know what you think, but I just think that they're not interested in any kind of free thought. In fact, I saw that personally, face-to-face, with Bilderbergers when I was in Dresden. Now, as soon as you mention something that might actually be disagreeing with them, they go into this kind of hissy fit huff. You know, they don't like it. They don't want to have to think about something they don't want to think about, because they're not used to having anybody question their position. Now, this is a really dangerous kind of groupthink. They've got into this horrific groupthink that they think they're right, and they've basically surrounded themselves with toadies, George. Anyone who agrees with them, thinks they're wonderful, butters them up, they're going to get a nice job. But anyone that questions them, it's like I've said this a few times, but it's almost like mentioning Princess Diana to Prince Charles. You know, you're going to get the withering look, he's going to turn on his heel, and he's going to be off, you know. Like, he doesn't want to discuss that. So there are certain things that these people do not want to think about or talk about. And one of those, I would imagine, actually one of the more enlightened of the Bilderbergers this year is the usual, he's on the steering committee, Peter Thiel. He is in a crowd of high-tech billionaires from the CIA and the NSA. And I mean, he's, you know, he owned 10% of Facebook before the stock exchange flotation, for example. He's the creator of PayPal. He's, you know, he's one of these people who just goes around with the banksters of Bilderberg's money and goes and creates these new high-tech organizations that they want. So he's a really key person, I think. He pretty much has been. You mentioned another person who was there, George, I think from Palantir, was it?
Yeah, Tony Karp is the head of Palantir, and then Peter Thiel is there. He has an interest in Palantir also. And I believe that they were founded using about $12 million of CIA money originally. So they're just an insider intelligence gathering type of operation, what they are, Palantir.
The other aspect of this I'd like to highlight is the contribution made by Manfred Dietrich. Now, Manfred is Swiss-German, and he was a banker over there, and he'd had enough of Switzerland. He said, look, you're just controlled by the elite, and, you know, the politicians in this country are useless. I'm moving out. And he took his money to Abkhazia. And he put his money, invested his money in Russia. Because he says, in Russia, you know, you actually get a good return interest rate on your money. And it's a much safer place to put your money than in the stock market bubble that's about to burst in the West. And Manfred, so he put his money where his mouth is. And I really admire him for that. He's over in Abkhazia now. And he's been doing a whole load of research on the Bilderbergers. He comes from originally a German family. I think he was actually born in Argentina. And he's uncovered several early Nazi Bilderbergers. So we're talking about from the 1950s. I discovered this whole business of Bernhard being in the Nazi party and being an SS officer. He was the original chairman of Bilderberg. So that should be a red flag to anyone. When I mentioned that on the main BBC, national BBC One daily politics program with Andrew Neil a few years ago, he dismissed it. This is, I think, at the Bilderberg conference in Watford. And I went to London to the BBC studios and then hopped on a train up to Watford Street. I was just talking about what I said to Andrew Neil. The guy Andrew Neil, by the way, he was the editor of the Times when Rupert Murdoch bought it, and he sacked all the best people, all the best writers, all the best photographers. He was basically a hatchet man, and he machine gunned all the best journalists we had in Britain from the Times, So Andrew Neil, when he asked me about Bernhard, I said, well, look, Bernhard, the chairman, was a Nazi. He said, well, a lot of people were Nazis in those days. Well, that's a typical thing, isn't it? Shrug it off. Oh, it's nothing. Doesn't matter if he's a Nazi. A lot of people were Nazis. Yeah, but a lot of people were war criminals. And the early Bilderbergers, there's evidence that Bernhard should have been shot as a spy because he was involved in betraying tens of thousands of British and American paratroopers at Arnhem and getting that whole... I mean, he basically sent someone in to betray the entire operation to the Abwehr. Bernhard should at that point have been shot, but no, instead he went on to become the chairman of Bilderberg 1954 to 1975 for 20 years. But what Manfred Petrich from Abkhazia has discovered is two guys. One is Joseph Abs. He was an early Bilderberg participant. Well, he was no shrinking violet. He was a senior Nazi working in Deutsche Bank in closing down Jewish bank accounts. In fact, stealing money from Jews and other so-called Untermensch across Nazi Germany and, in fact, occupied Europe too, and making sure that money went to the bank and to the party. It was basically stealing the wealth of the Jews. And this is a guy who was an attendee looking across the table at the Brits and the Americans in the late 1950s at Bilderberg conferences. So that's just one. There was another one called, I think, something George Kaysinger. He was working in Nazi Germany for the Foreign Ministry as a second in command of the radio propaganda section of the Foreign Ministry under Ribbentrop. So he was involved in the foreign propaganda broadcast like Lord Haw Haw from Radio Luxembourg, who used to broadcast throughout the war, taking the mickey out of the British. And he was also involved in surveillance of all the British broadcasts. But these people were senior Nazis and big shots in the Nazi party during World War II. People didn't realize what their role had been in World War II in the late 1950s. They hadn't figured it out. So they were sitting having Bilderberg conferences with these guys without actually realizing that they were sitting opposite senior Nazis who'd been responsible and part players in the deaths of millions of people.
Yeah, Tony, you've studied this quite a bit, so I would say that you probably have a better grasp than most people.
I think what I'd like to do is just to sort of flag up Manfred's blog, which is really good, actually. I mean, it's all in German, but you can get your favorite translator thing to translate it. It's really, and he speaks pretty good English. I mean, I did a couple of interviews. If your listeners want to hear his take on Bilderberg, for around about 15 minutes, we have a chat with him on all these different aspects, including Russia. Very interesting aspect of what they'll be discussing at Bilderberg. And that's at thisweek.org.uk on our last program, the Bilderberg Politics Show. But look, the Dutch royal family, the king was supposed to go, but he didn't. And
Queen Maxima's sister supposedly hung herself down in Buenos Aires. That's what happened down there. That's why a king of the Netherlands had to leave with his wife to go to the funeral in Argentina.
Interesting, isn't it? And I wonder if it has any connection with the Argentines pulling out of the football match with the Israelis.
I wouldn't be sure about or know anything connection to that at this time.
This is a whole other side of it, and I've been reading up more and more about this. I mean, the trail of Bormann is the most fascinating trail of the Second World War, and that's why the book Op JB by Christopher Crichton is subtitled The Last Great Secret of the Second World War. It really is the last great secret, and the trouble is that even he admits that he doesn't know the truth towards the end. All he can say is that he helped bring Bormann out of Nazi Germany right under the noses of the Russians. And in fact, they had to kill some Russians in order to make sure, because they had a team of nearly 100 commandos and canoes to get Bormann out along the rivers. I think it's the Spey in Berlin and the Havel, these various rivers and the Muggelsee, and then they brought them in, you know, from the Russian zone into the British-held territory in these canoes, and then in these small Royal Navy ships. And they had to basically con the Russians into thinking that they were looking for Nazi war criminals, which they did very well, with the Russian speaking someone who spoke Russian. They had a Russian uniform. Yeah, so they put a Russian uniform on her. Anyway, it's a fantastic book, that. And the trouble was that Bormann was the various people, including the Russians, believed that Bormann was hiding in Britain. They picked up some intelligence that is happening, so they kept having to move him around. Eventually, they moved him to a riding stable. They did some plastic surgery on him, and then when the actual Russian president, I think it was Khrushchev, was coming to Britain, they were so worried that the Russians might find out something about this, but they had a big diplomatic mission coming to Britain, that they had to actually at that point then move Bormann over to South America finally. And it looks like that's where he died. He basically lived in Paraguay, on the Paraguay-Argentine border, so that he could nip into one of three different countries at any point that he needed to. But it was from there that he created this kind of Nazi financial empire. And the idea was the Nazis basically changed their clothes from SS uniforms into suits and marched into the post-war. It was Henry Morgenthau at the Federal Reserve. I think he was actually at the Treasury, wasn't he, Morgenthau? And Montague Norman at the Bank of England. Now, Montague Norman was the real crook in all of this, because he had been, just as King Edward VIII had been, an enthusiastic Nazi. I mean, he was trying to actually help the Nazi party come to power. In fact, I think that there was a quite strong aid by the British to create the Nazi party and they helped them rise to power in the first place, because they wanted to, you know, this is the excuse anyway, they wanted to keep the communists out of power in Germany. So they thought, well, if we've got a strong kind of fascist leader, that would be rather handy.
The Catholic Church actually helped Hitler come to power, because they were ahead of the central party, and they deferred power to him.
Well, I would rephrase that, if I were you, and say the Vatican. Yeah, I know, because the thing is, this is the these are the machinations of the you know, the apex of the pyramid. And the apex of the pyramid is often got nothing to do with the rest of the pyramid. So everybody is basically paying for a few people at the top to be crooks and we're doing all these kind of machinations. I mean, this is a Masonic principle, isn't it?
The secret societies have always been behind the scenes manipulating everyone.
I think, just to close, we've got to be very, very aware of just how little we are really being told about how the world is working, just how utterly denuded our democracy has become in the West, and just how much we're now relying on the Russians to actually keep any kind of world order, to basically keep us from going over the edge into chaos, utter chaos. I mean, we've seen that the creation of chaos in Libya, in Iraq, in Afghanistan, you know, and in fact, you know, it's turned into, really, Afghanistan has turned into a massive drug farm. I mean, you know, run by the intelligence services from, you know, the transatlantic countries. We've also seen the bringing about of a kind of new leadership class. That is to say, people at quite a young age are being told, tapped on the shoulder and say, you make a great leader. I think you should be a leader in the future. These are the pliable stooges of the people who are really running things from behind the scenes. And that is not democracy by any stretch of the imagination. And I think we've got to watch out, really, for any kind of, you know, new 9/11 style event. Because it seems to me that that is the method that they wish to use in order to create even more chaos. I mean, look at what's happened in Europe, for example. It seems to me that this is not an accident that we're at this kind of, you know, this weird stage where there's lots of countries which are wanting to secede from Brussels, for example, the Catalonians, many of the ordinary Spanish people want to, the Greeks want to, the Italians have quite clearly in the March election decided they want out of the euro, and they're not being allowed to do that. The British are also being told you may not be allowed to leave the euro customs zone, all this kind of thing. So there is definitely, I believe, a definite social crisis being created in Europe, a chaos type situation. And that's what these people really operate on, is trying to bring order from the chaos that they create. And we, as ordinary subjects and citizens in the West, have become as much a target as the Chinese and the Russians have of these people. They're basically psychopathic maniacs trying to gather more and more power to themselves, and they don't seem to care how many people they kill, whether of their own people in their own countries or of other superpowers around the world, in order to get what they want. And I think anyone with half a brain cell really needs to, no one's going to tell you this stuff on the mainstream press, because they're part of the conspiracy of silence on it. And they will also try and get the people who are going to destroy us elected in elections. They will promote them, the people who are actually going to destroy us. So we need to get really proactive, and I think Bilderberg is a really good place to start in order for anyone out there with an interest in what's really going on in the world to actually learn about what's really happening. And, you know, because no one's going to do it for you, George. That's why we do the secret truth, because...
Tony, we all do so much out there, and you do a great deal. You really do a lot.
Thanks, and you, George. But I think if you start looking into it, there's lots and lots to see there. Only thing is, it won't be there in the controlled fake news media. By the way, I don't suppose they do, but if you speak Russian, the Russians, something like 70 million Russians tomorrow evening, Sunday evening, are going to get a whole excellent program all about the Bilderberg, analyzing 2018 Bilderberg. We're going to get nothing at all from our controlled mainstream media. Nothing whatsoever.
Yeah, you're right about that, Tony. This mainstream media, they're not going to do any good for us. You know that. That's for sure.
It's more than that. It's also the fact that anybody in the press, in the media, who's writing books or whatever, anybody who is telling the truth about these guys and the extent to which they control the Western world and our future politicians, etc., anybody is bought up or sold off, you know. So they either get shut you down as a magazine, or they'll just buy you up. And they believe they can buy up the whole world. And in fact, maybe they can. If they have enough money, they can just buy up anything. They can buy up people, they can buy up buildings, transmitters, printing presses, anything they want.
Yeah, they have all the money in the world to buy out about anything they want, but they can't buy love, real love, and they can't buy honesty and the things that really matter. Thank you. Thank you, Tony. Good night.